ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Families can be messy, chaotic, and sometimes baffling. Regina Botros knew she had that kind of family, a rambling one, with six half-brothers and sisters and a mum who married multiple times. And Regina loved them all. Hello, Kirsty Melville here, and welcome to the History Listen and the next episode in our series of family tales. When Regina's 13-year-old daughter asked her what it was like to be half Egyptian, she couldn't really answer her. And so she started to dig into her complicated family story to try to find the father she hardly knew. Regina's mum had died in 2017, but she left her letters that hint at her Egyptian father and his pet penguin.
I grew up being called a wog or made fun of because my name, Regina, rhymed with the body part. My curly locks were tortured into a frizzy pom-pom ponytail or told they were too messy. I always felt like I didn't belong. A brown-skinned girl in a very white world, in a very white family. A big white family with three brothers and three sisters. I don't know when I started to notice it. Maybe it was when I didn't get the role of Snow White in the end-of-year performance, even though I was a better dancer than the tall, blonde Leanne. Or maybe it was looking at the Santa photo sitting next to my younger sister, Kelly, with her long, straight, gorgeous blonde hair I wanted all for myself. But I was 13 when my world turned upside down. The same age my daughter is now.
Hi, I'm Hartley. Yes, I'm 13.
And I started to think that maybe I was adopted.
Adopted? How confronting.
Hi.
It took me a while to ask, but I did ask my mum.
Hi, Mum. How are you going?
Good, darling.
Well, what did she say?
How are you?
When are we going to talk about
it? She told me I was Egyptian. My dad was Egyptian? How exotic. I don't think I'd even thought much about Egypt, and here it was, written on my skin.
What's his name?
Monir Farid Botros.
Where in Egypt is your dad from?
Well, I know he was from Cairo.
What kind of food do Egyptians eat?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know anything about the culture.
Do you know how your parents met?
Well, much later, in 2006, Mum gave me a letter describing how they met.
The first time I saw Monir, he came into the shop.
And my father lived with us till I was about two.
I fell in love.
And she loved him.
Aw, that's beautiful.
But that's about it. Oh, there is one other thing.
With a penguin in tow.
He had a penguin.
What? A penguin?
A real live pet penguin.
Wow.
So I want to get more of an idea of who he was, how he met my mum, why they didn't stay together. Oh, she did tell me it was because of cultural differences, but what does that even mean? And to give you, Hartley, an answer.
What does it mean to be Egyptian?
What does it mean to be Egyptian? So I'm on the hunt. When Mum died in 2017, she left me her laptop with writings that spanned her life.
Growing up in the 40s was slow.
She was born in 1938.
After school?
In the Blue Mountains, in New South Wales.
I'd take off for the paddocks.
At a property called Yester Grange.
Where my horse Flicker was grazing.
A 100-acre heritage-listed place.
For a gallop down to Lawson and back.
Her mum was the first woman on council in the Blue Mountains.
After dinner, Mum would be off to a women's auxiliary meeting.
And started the Pioneer Way.
Or the Committee on Civil Defence.
And her dad, a lolly maker.
Dad would go to the factory.
The Andersons or Anderthorsens from Norway originally.
Charles Anderson, born in Norway, 1832.
But I'm looking for that letter, the one she gave me in 2006. It must be here somewhere. Hang on, here it is. Ah, Regina. I'm sitting on a train travelling
to
spend
a day with my daughter,
with my
Regina. And my thoughts wander back to the wonder of her birth.
The wonder of her birth.
All of a sudden, it's 30 years ago.
So let's wind back the clock. It's the 70s.
And I'm still married to David, a rogue Scotsman.
He'd gotten out of prison to marry my mum in 1956.
Mum did not speak to me for 2 months.
Her parents were a good judge of character.
His interests were not for the family.
David, Mum's first husband, is the father to my five older brothers and sisters. Those fair-skinned ones I mentioned earlier.
Hi.
I suppose they were half siblings, but I never thought of them like that.
So it goes Mark, Joe,
Sharon,
Brett, Scott. And Scott. Yeah. They were just my family, and I love them to bits. Mark is 15 years older than me.
I went to 13 primary schools. Two of them I was there for a day.
Well, that's because David would come home, uproot everyone, charming his way into a wild, dramatic, fabulous idea.
He was definitely charismatic.
Joanna is 14 years older than me.
Some people can just, you know, charm anybody, and he was one of those people, you know.
He wasn't my dad, but I secretly wished he was. So I'm wondering if they can tell me about my father, Monier. Well, they called him Peter. They were there when my mum and my dad met.
Being Egyptian.
Mum was still married to David, that crazy Scotsman.
My earliest memory of your dad was, he's a nice bloke, smile. I think the dad considered him a friend.
Mark would have been about 13 when they met.
He used to open bottles, long necks, with his teeth.
I have a letter from Mum, and she didn't write it till I was in my 20s or something, but describing a shop where Peter walked, walked in with a penguin.
Yeah, that's Clovelly Road.
So Mum owned a corner shop and all the kids worked there.
We were busiest on the weekend because we were on the bus route to Clovelly Beach.
And he had it in a bag and opened up the bag. Mum was there and I was there.
I just love that he had a penguin. I just love it.
It had been washed up on Clovelly Beach with an injured wing and was convalescing in Manir's bathtub. He was Egyptian and looked it. He had a bunch of curly black hair, brown skin, and flat feet like the penguins. He made me laugh. I fell in love.
There was two shops in Clovelly.
So one was the milk bar Mum owned and all the kids helped in.
There was one down near the beach.
Which was the motorbike shop.
The motorbike shop.
That was their working house.
Yeah,
I mean, Dad had so much control over Mum that, you know, she did whatever he said, really. And she was a working girl for a while.
Oh.
The bike shop thing was a bit of a front. That was their brothel.
What? A brothel? But it was actually an operating brothel,
yeah,
was it?
It was, for 12 months.
Was she open about it?
She talked to me about it, not in great detail. She felt she didn't really have a choice.
14 long years of my bondage. Yes, bondage.
I don't think the penguin was the first time that he came into the shop, from the way that they reacted, because I was there when he brought it in. So I think that was just a reason to come in and say, oh, hi, how you going? Look what I've got, you know, as people do when they're trying to court somebody.
Oh, they fell in love.
He asked poignant questions that let me see life again.
Okay, in this letter Mum gave me in 2006, she goes on here to describe trying to leave David to live with my dad, Monier.
Once again, I told David I wanted my freedom. David said, you can go, but you cannot say goodbye to the children. Just go. I felt very sick at leaving them without a word of goodbye. Monier and I moved into a flat in Paddington. He worked and I started to heal.
The letter describes how David must have been watching her and Monier in the flat right before this next awful scene. My brother and sister, Joanna and Brett, also remember this night.
That's where Dad stuck us in his cab one night and raced through King's Cross and burst in this door.
Probably the worst night of my life.
Yeah,
I
know, that was terrifying.
I think she wrote that to me in that same letter.
One night, while Monier was on night shift, David called at the flat. When I answered the door, he pushed in and called all the children to come in from the car. He lined them up in age order.
Mark, Joanna,
Sharon, Brett, then Scott.
And then tore my clothes off and beat me.
I couldn't understand why we were all being dragged in and see...
Brett's the middle child.
Dad just bagging him, saying, you know, look what this slut, fucking bitch woman terrorising her and him and us.
And us, yeah.
I don't know how old I was, I reckon 7 or 8. But I certainly going like, what are we doing here? Why is my life torn apart?
The humiliation was terrible. When Monier came home, I told him. And he said he had a plan to go to Whyalla in South Australia.
So the next night it says they took a train.
We didn't have a sleeping berth, but we just sat up all night and Monier talked to the other passengers. He was very easygoing and entertaining, and I felt safe and loved.
Money has saved my mom by taking her to South Australia. They're in love and they realised David would not leave them alone and it wasn't safe.
So for 4 months, things were calm and good.
Wasn't long till David, through cunning detective work, found them and convinced Mum to come back to Sydney for the children.
Anyway, you were born in Crown Street, I believe. I'm not 100% sure.
In December 1971, my little daughter Regina was born. She had thick black curly hair.
She had thick black curly hair like her father and soft brown skin. Monia chose the name Regina.
Habibti Regina.
Okay, so now I'm a baby living with my mom and my dad Monia, or Peter if you like, and all my brothers and sisters in Sydney.
Monia worked as a guard on the trains, 80 to 90 hours a week to keep the family.
David was no longer living with us, but he was still pushing himself into our lives.
We had instructions then from Dad that we were not to talk to Peter. We weren't to interact with him when he was to walk into a room. We were to get up and walk out of the room, and we did this.
Because Dad had told us to get him out of the house and then he'd be able to come home.
Oh. Yeah.
This was all about Dad still thought that there was hope.
The atmosphere at home was very difficult. David would turn up each night outside the home at dinner time, and the kids would run away from the table. One night, Monia was home, and when he went out to call the children in again, Dave and he started a fist fight. After that, David carried a stick with him that he called a wog basher. He told the kids he was going to kill Monia.
They told me more and more stories.
I cake for Peter. He thought we did it.
My dad pushed to the brink,
when he got his gun,
pulling out a gun.
I really thought I was going to be a goner that day.
And how David wanted to sell his daughters.
Yeah, we would have been worth a bit. I can remember him putting his fingers places they shouldn't have been when I was like in third class.
It's horrifying.
Sex with me.
David sold my mum. He prostituted her and tried to do the same to his children.
Mum always said that she used Peter to get away from Dad. If she didn't have Peter, she couldn't get away.
My dad saved my mum.
And I think that's probably very true.
But their relationship didn't stand a chance, culture or not. What do you remember about me being different?
See, you were just part of the family to us, you know?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. You had curly hair.
You might have felt different, but...
Well, we didn't feel you were different.
Ah, well, I just go, this is one of the clan.
Well, you certainly do now. You look like an Anderson.
I look like Mum.
You look like Mum and Nana.
Okay. Well, I look like Mum because I have straightened and dyed my hair now. And at the time, well, no matter how much they, my older siblings, saw me as one of the clan, I was still different. I lived in different skin.
Monia and I separated.
My mum told me Monia used to take me on weekends for a while, but I'd cry, so he'd stop coming.
I never saw him again. I often think of him and how he saved my life. And he gave me a wonderful daughter.
And that's the end of the letter. So I was a toddler. And over time, I forgot about him. And when my younger sister Kelly was born, the one in the Santa photos with the long blonde hair I still covet, well, I was six. And it was Mum and me and Kelly and Kelly's dad, John Weldon, Mum's new husband. And, well, he became the only dad I remembered. Until I was 13, my daughter Hartley's age.
Oh, so your name was Regina Weldon, not Buttress?
That's right. And Mum, your grandma, she worked really hard at the tax office, long, long hours. Now I know why. And I remember her getting me up at 5 in the morning to do my hair before school. She did not know what to do with curly hair, so she'd brush it into a frizzy ponytail. And that was until the only father I knew, John Weldon, well, he disappeared.
So what happened?
I came home from school one day and he wasn't there and he didn't come home for a long time. I'm talking months and months and months and months, and we had to move.
I remember walking in and then Mum found a letter on the table.
A letter from John the day he left for good.
I was the last one to walk in.
Kelly remembers this so much better than I do.
She started crying and you started crying and then I ran up and started crying too, and then we all hugged. But I do also remember Mum throwing a chair.
I can imagine wanting to throw a chair. My poor Mum. The letter said he, John Weldon, Kelly's dad, had gambled the house away. Yes, over a long time. Mum would give him the money for the repayments and he'd go and gamble them, leaving Kelly, a preschooler, in the car.
I know one time I got really hot. They used to buy me lollies sometimes from the service station, so maybe that was on the way or something like that.
Oh, God. And then he disappeared. And the bailiff turned up.
Foreclosure or something like that on the house. Oh, how horrible for Mum.
It's so devastating. John had run away to a circus, like going out for milk and never coming back. I thought at the time it was quite fantastic. And maybe, just maybe he'd take me to the circus. I mean, that would be excellent.
That would be so cool. I would love to work at the circus.
But I didn't realise the gravity of the situation, and the magic of the circus soon wore off. He wasn't coming back. And somehow, in his absence, I started to question everything. Why don't I look like him? I mean, I didn't look like my fair-skinned mum, the Andersons, and why do I look so different to Kelly? Those Santa photos seem to be sending a sign.
So until you were 13, like my age, you didn't know that you were Egyptian?
That's right, the turning point. That's when I asked my mum, am I adopted? And she told me my dad was Egyptian and we lived together till I was 2.
What was it like to find out you were half Egyptian?
It's like I slid my arms into this identity, like a coat, and it suddenly fit. The skin sat on my body.
So John did adopt you?
Yes, I guess he did. My mum paid off all of John's debts. What a woman.
I love Grandma.
But I had no idea what it meant to be Egyptian, just to look it.
What does it mean to be Egyptian?
What does it mean to be Egyptian?
What about the penguin?
And yes, the penguin. Was it real? Well, when I was in my late teens, I decided to try and find Monir Farid Botros, my father. The only photos I have of him are when I was christened in a Coptic Orthodox church. So I visited some churches and asked around for any Botroses, and I advertised in the classifieds at the time. And then, when I was about 20, a letter turned up, hang on, from my father. He had been looking for me at the same time.
15th of the 9th, 1992.
Habibti Regina, my queen.
My darling sweetheart.
My darling sweetheart. One day you'll find out just how much I love you and how much you mean to me. My number plate on my old car was RUV000, Regina, Ursula and Veronica.
I have two sisters.
Ursula and Veronica know of you. You were never out of my heart. Would you please contact me?
There were a lot of letters.
I loved your mother very much.
He was living in Kayama on the south coast of
absolutely
Sydney.
Absolutely wanted. I don't think I'll be able to attend your 21st.
He would have been maybe 50.
بس أنا تحت أمرك. But I am at your command.
He told me what Egypt was like when he was there.
Violence erupted in Egypt. Young Christian girls will be kidnapped by Muslims. They will be married off or kept in captivity until she becomes pregnant. That is the way they humiliate us.
I met my dad. It was incredible. He was dark-skinned and strong-looking.
See you Saturday, my darling. Love, your father, 17th of October, 1992.
And I have two younger sisters, Ursula and Veronica, or Ronnie. I was 21 when we met, and Ronnie would have been about 13. But it's been 30 years and I haven't seen her since. And I only knew my dad for about a year. So I'm wondering if she can tell me what he was like as a father. It's so exciting. Ronnie.
Hi.
I remember thinking we had similar experiences in our upbringing.
Even in our looks too, yeah. I think, when we were maybe a bit younger.
The eyes, the cheekbones. Yeah. Finally, I look like someone. Oh, my hands look similar. Skin or the hair. Mm-hmm. Do you identify as being Egyptian now?
I do. I used to just be Aussie. I say Egyptian first now.
It's funny, I always say I'm half Egyptian. I want to ask about your childhood. What was it like?
So, good memories. He lived in Bondi. Bondi Beach, yeah, right across the road from the beach. That's when he had a car. I remember he used to come and pick me up.
He wrote to me about a car and it had RUV as the number plate. Mm. Regina, Ursula, Veronica.
Yeah.
It was a white
station wagon.
Yeah.
great memories of that.
Yeah. Did he talk about me?
Yes. You were mentioned a lot.
My darling sweetheart, eventually we will get to spend some weekends together. Maybe once a month. And I can pick up the three of you and you can spend some more time together as sisters. From your old fuddy daddy daddy.
He always imagined that everything was going to be happily ever after with us three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he drive a taxi?
In 1988, I had a car accident. It was suspected that I had a brain tumor. I have whiplash on the left side, increasing and pinching the nerves. I lost my left kneecap. Osteoarthritis everywhere. I'm being punished for the past, the present, and future lives.
I think it's just that, you know, losing Dad early and then... I'm a very emotional person. Sorry.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I'm probably going to cry about 58 times a day.
I'd only known him for about a year. And he died. In 1993... I got a call one weekend telling me the news. And early the next week...
Habibti Regina.
One last letter arrived.
Regina, I'll be coming to Sydney on Wednesday. And I'll try to see Ursula and Veronica. If you like, ring here and I'll pick you up. I've also made some modifications to my will to provide assistance for my sisters in Egypt. For now, here is a little help. The 12th of the 3rd, 1993, $100.
He'd left me this money post-dated in line with his government benefits. It made me laugh at the absurdity of it.
I found out that he had taken a lot of pills and a lot of alcohol and then put a lot of things into his oven and set it on the
light. Munir Farid Boutros.
Dad had tried to kill himself by taking medication for his injuries and drinking a lot, starting a fire, but then changed his mind.
Committed suicide, pretty much.
We have the same memory of this.
Changed it because he was found in the shower.
But it was too late. Do you have a favourite memory of him?
Yeah, so I always wanted a dog.
A dog?
Always wanted a dog. But we lived in units, like, you couldn't have a dog. And then he got me a dog. And it was like the best day ever. So it was with him and then I'd come every weekend and I'd see my dog and then...
God, that's beautiful. I took care of it for you.
And he turned up and the dog used to be there in the car with him and all my friends used to be like, oh my God.
I just love that memory. I think I'm going to keep it for myself.
Yeah.
Adorable.
Good memories.
He loved you.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah. I always felt loved.
There are things about my dad I can't quite work out, but I think he loved me too. After he died, I took my name back. Regina Boutros, the one on my birth certificate.
Boutros.
But there's one last chapter to this story. It's 2016, the year before my mum died, and I get a message on Facebook from a cousin, Dad's nephew, in Egypt. Apparently, he'd contacted every Regina Boutros he could find on Facebook. I remember me, my mum and daughter, Hartley, three generations huddling around Skype that year, a meeting that did not eventuate. We rang, he didn't answer. I put it down to the language barrier. Well, this year, I'm trying again. I hope it happens.
What's their name?
Their name's Rifat Farthi.
Wait, are you going to be on call?
Well, I am. I'm about to call. I'm not sure how good their English is, so... Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Rifat.
Hi. I'm very glad to hear your voice. How
I can hear my father's voice in him.
Hello.
Hello.
I asked them where he grew up.
Shiban Street, Chobra. It's the most famous street in Cairo.
Interesting.
You know, your father knows five languages, other Arabic, English, German, Italian, Russian, French.
Wow.
Super smart.
They take 5 years in Aswan, I think.
The Aswan High Dam across the Nile.
Yes. Oh, hi.
He's turned the video on.
Hi.
Oh, I have the same face. My aunt's dad's sisters.
Hi. How are you? Layla.
How are you?
Oh, they start crying with so much emotion and kissing the camera.
They miss you very much. I have some pictures too.
They're showing Hartley and me photos of my father. He's so handsome. Hartley, the penguin.
Penguin
here
was.
Oh my gosh, it's so cute.
His home Perth in Australia.
Oh, is that Monier? Your grandfather?
Look how much your fathers are loving you and your sister. Shakar.
That's the car Ronnie was talking about.
Ursula, Veronica, are you me?
You, my heart.
Rifat, why did my father come to Australia?
He's trying to find a better life.
A life? He's
trying to find his dreams.
I think you would have been in his dreams, Hartley.
They are asking you to visit Egypt, you and Harley and her.
We can't wait.
I love you, Hartley.
I love them so much.
I love you. I love you.
More and more faces are pushing themselves into shot. The room is full of my Egyptian family. And suddenly, I remember how I always wanted that other family, the one that came with my Greek or Italian friends, fast talking over each other, pushing food or tea or love at you. And now I realize it's always been there. I just didn't know it.
Thank you so much, Rifat. Thank you. Hi. Bye.
I couldn't stop smiling.
My daughter.
It's just so funny for me because I was part of their life, but they weren't part of mine. You're crying.
Why are you crying?
I don't know.
Just the emotion of it. Yeah.
Come here.
Give me a hug. Look at your green eyes. You got mum's eyes, your grandma's eyes.
I wish I looked more like you.
Really?
Yeah. Then so fair-skinned and light-eyed.
Didn't you also say that, like, when you were young, you wanted to be more fair-skinned and wish you were blonde?
Yes. But you know what? Having you, I realised I wanted to be a role model for you, to accept your hair, the hair that I rejected. But I didn't want you to feel like that. So now I just want my curly hair back.
In this hunt for my Egyptian side, I've heard a lot of things that were hard to cope with. Some I couldn't share. And others, well, I've been scared to. But what I found is my mum, who survived against all odds, and my dad, who saved her. And together, I found me in this messy, chaotic family. And I feel I belong just a little more in my skin.
In My Skin was written and produced by Regina Botros. The sound engineer was John Jacobs, and the supervising producer was Claudia Taranto. I'm Kirsty Melville, and I'll catch you next time for the History Listen. See you then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.